We're going to call the meeting in order.
Mr. Dad, we need a bike path there.
Store?
Here.
Summers. Weibel?
Here.
Clemens. Clifford?
Here.
McGuire?
Here.
Mitchell?
Here.
Coward?
Present. Need approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, any discussion or correction? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Dueling pianos.
Need approval of the minutes for April 5th, 2018.
I move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, public participation, seeing none.
They really want to talk to you.
Any communication for the committee? Seeing none. Need approval of the county and township motor fuel tax claim.
I move to approve.
They're really wanting to talk to you.
Hello? I'm at a meeting. That won't be, it'll be after 10. Okay, then maybe try to call you all morning.
I'll second.
Thank you.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, county engineer's report.
All right. We had the bid on May 1st for the two bridges up on the road between Thomasboro and Flatville. You had already given me contract award authority on those projects, but we always bring the bid tab back to the committee just for your review. The engineer's estimate was $1,221,000. Got five bids, which is really a good number for bridge construction. Low bid was Big O Services out of Danville at $1,153,000. So it was about 5.5% underneath the engineer's estimate. So we have given them approval so that they can go ahead and order the steel, because that's typically the holdup on those types of projects, especially given the environment that we're in with steel prices right now. That's why you'd given me contract award authority. So does anybody have any questions or anything regarding the bid tab? I think you have a larger one printed out, maybe.
Yeah. How much experience do we have with Big O? We've worked with them before, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first experience we have with him building this type of bridge. And I asked him when he was leaving the bid letting what his experience was with it. And he just hired a foreman who's been with Stark, Autobomb, O'Neill, Newell, White. He's been all over the place. And he's built hundreds of these bridges. So he's got a guy working for him who's very versed in this type of construction.
How is this bridge different?
It's steel beam with a concrete deck. Whereas Big O's typically done the precast beams where you just set them in place and you're done.
Gotcha.
So I have confidence that they'll do a good job. And I'm glad to have another. Stark has, I think ever since we started building these types of bridges, Stark has pretty much been the low bidder.
Yeah.
See, their second low bidder on this one. So it's good to have another qualified person that's, because these other guys come in like Halverson's and White, and you see their numbers are pretty high, and they typically are. They're just kind of hunting and fishing for something that they might be able to get at a higher price. But because Newell, who was kind of our low guy for a long time. As far as when Newell took out a set of plans, everybody knew they better sharpen their pencils because they're going to have a good number. They've kind of starting to retire and not do nearly as much work as they used to. So Big O is actually some kind of relation to the Newells.
Okay.
I don't know. FU, something, I don't know. They're all related. The O'Neills, the Newells, and this is an O'Neill. It's Nick O'Neill, who O'Neill Brothers went out of business a few years back. They were a big bridge contractor.
It's internecing. It's internecing.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, sir.
Do you ever have concern if, you know, the new person gets a low bid about completion of the job, and your and most importantly is your satisfaction with the work?
We've been very satisfied with Big O's work in the past. It's got a completion date on it. He realizes that he didn't seem to think he would have any issues with meeting that completion date. I think we got October 15th completion date on this project with a June 15th start. He was saying he's probably going to start about July 1st because he's the steel availability and timing of that, which actually works better. Ehler Brothers had said July 1st. They would prefer that we not close the road prior to that because of their farming operations. And I went to June 15th just to give the contractor a little bit more time, but I think Big O's saying it's going to be July 1st anyway. So okay. I think it's going to work out.
Jeff, this is the bridge across the...
These are pretty small bridges.
Now, where is this bridge located?
So there's two of them on this contract. One of them is just east of Ehler Brothers.
Okay.
And then there's another one about 2.5 miles down the road. Both built in the 70s. Exact same configuration almost. That's why we bid them as a single contract, because they're close to each other. So he'll come in, rip out one bridge, drive the piling. He'll move down to the other bridge, rip it out, drive the piling, and then they'll start kind of doing, you know, they'll pour the abutments here, then they'll pour the abutments here. They'll kind of work back and forth.
What kind of bridges are they pulling out? Are they precast or are they steel?
They're precast.
Well, it held up pretty well if that's
yeah.
70s.
Well, so they were widened in the 70s. They were probably built back in the 40s. So it's an old bridge that was built in place, and then they came in and widened it with precast. So it's kind of this mixed bag conglomeration of bridge. So it's a unique, and both of them were done at the same time, so it's kind of unique that we're doing them both at the same time as well, because they were both widened. This road was given to the county at some point, and the county said, we need to widen the bridges. So either the state or the county widened them at that time.
Do you like the use of steel over precast?
Absolutely.
For longevity?
Yeah, because we've had issues with the precast on county roads because of our salt usage.
That's what I was thinking.
Township roads are fine because they don't use salt. I mean, the ones around the CU urbanized area use salt, but out in the rural areas they don't. And those precast the last 50, 75 years, but on our roads, the salt tends to eat those precast up a little faster, quite a bit faster actually, than the ones where we pour them in place.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any more? They'll shut that road completely down.
Completely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you won't be able to go over the bridge. You can go around a mile and jig-jag back and forth, you know, kind of like we did on Monticello Road last year where we had two bridges closed. Yeah. That wasn't in your area.
Yeah, well, I get over there. And open by October 15th?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
All right. Next item is a resolution awarding the contract for Staley Road. We had a bid on the same day. We had a lot of bids on May 1st. Michelle was quite busy opening packets and collecting all the bids. So this is the road where we're using the money that we got from the Ameren Road Use Agreement from their damage to our roads for putting in their rivers project through Champaign County. So you see the bid tab there. Typical, we have two bidders on asphalt projects, Cross and Open Road. Engineer's estimate is $842,000. It came in at $849,000. So real close to the engineer's estimate. About $7,000 difference between the estimate and the bid. Cross will do a good job. They've done a lot of work for us. You see, Open Road was relatively close to them as well, within $50,000. So I would recommend we award the contract to Cross Construction.
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay, open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
And then on the same day, we had the bid for the two box culvert projects down on County Highway 19 in the Sadorus area. I think Michelle printed out a larger bid tab on that one as well, because we had seven bidders on that project, which just amazed me for a project that came in at $66,000. We get seven people to show up and put in a bid, but it's work that anybody can do because it's dirt work and it's precast concrete box construction. But our estimate was $103,864. The low bid from Foyt's was $65,828. So that's 37% underneath our estimate, about $38,000. Foyt's will do a great job. If there's a contractor that I have a lot of faith in, they are definitely one of them. So I would definitely recommend award of the contract to Foyt's.
Can I ask a information question? The range on this is quite dramatic. Mm-hmm. Is there any insight you can share with us that would have caused this delay?
Well, White Construction doesn't typically do this kind of work, and they're out of Indiana, so, and they're always high. I mean, if you look back at the bridge project that we did on County Highway 11, they're always high. But, you know, you look at Foyt's, and you look at Stark, and you look at Big O, and you look at Cross, they're all, you know, relatively close. And then you got a couple like Deuce, who doesn't really do this kind of work that much, and Autobahn, who doesn't either. You got some people that came in hoping there wouldn't be other bidders, just looking, hunting and pecking for a job they might be able to get and make a whole bunch of money on.
Okay, thanks for the explanation. I appreciate it.
Can I get a motion?
So moved. Second.
Okay, open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Okay, the next item, had a lot of conversation about the stop sign placement project. The plans and the agreement and everything have been to Paris and are sitting in Springfield. We're hoping for a June 5th letting date. And as you know, this is a federal job being let locally. But in order to expedite everything, because it takes the state seemingly forever to get contracts put together and get a real award to somebody, in order to expedite it, I'd like to have the authority to award it to the lowest bidder, as long as the project comes in within 10% of our estimate, so that we don't put any hitches in trying to get this thing awarded and getting the stop signs up, you know, during the summertime, is our plan. If the state can make that happen for us.
Move to approve, if that's warranted.
One second.
Move to second. Discussion.
Have you had any blowback from people not wanting a stop sign?
No.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe one or two people. Adjacent counties, we've had some, because we got county line roads where Champaign County, a township in Champaign County maintains this mile, and then maybe a township in Ford County maintains this mile. And so the intersection is kind of a joint jurisdiction. And there are some, in particular, see in Piatt, we're all good. Down in Douglas, we're all good. clean raw good, Vermilion raw good, but in Ford County, there's a couple of townships. They wanted us to sign a maintenance agreement and take care of the stop signs forever. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. If you guys don't want them at your intersection, we won't put them up at your intersection. And so they've asked that we not put them up because they don't want to maintain them. So that's the only issues.
Which county is that?
Ford County. Yeah. They're a little different up there.
What about Vermilion?
They're good. They've got stop signs mostly at all their intersections anyway.
But they have gravel roads.
Yeah, they do.
Well, that's permeable pavement.
Yes, it
is. Yeah, except you got to wash your car once you've driven
on it.
It's tough
do the
life,
bidding.
Max.
We will do the bidding.
I've done those gravel roads. I know them very well.
We will do the bidding now that, you know, the county has the award authority, so if you grant that to me, I would award it, but then the contracts still have to go through the state process of being signed by the Secretary of Transportation of the state of Illinois. So it takes a little while to get that to happen.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All right, and we have a petition from Rick Wolken, Summer Township, for replacement of some culverts at the corner of Fort Harris and Cottonwood. It's a relatively busy corner for his township and for any township. He's got some old culverts that are in bad repair. That are too narrow. He wants to kind of widen out the radiuses of the intersection because of the traffic that's going through there. So we plan to remove two 60-inch metal pipes, replace that with an 8x3 concrete box culvert, and remove a 36-inch metal pipe and replace that with a 4x2 concrete box culvert. And they'll be wider and obviously much better repair than the metal pipes he has in there right now. So he has petitioned the county for 50% participation in those projects. We estimate the cost to be around $48,000. So I would need approval of that resolution and petition.
I move to approval.
Second.
We moved in second.
Do some work, Max.
Any discussion? Seeing all in favor say aye.
Okay. Aye.
Anyone opposed?
And then we have a petition and resolution from Raymond Township for the replacement of two different structures. You see a map there.
Motion to approve.
On the back. You're trying to get ahead of the game, are you?
No, these guys are giving me crap.
Replacing a couple of structures. One of them is a 4x2 existing, replacing with a 6x2. And the other one's a 2x2 existing, replacing with a 4x2. They're just too narrow, too small. Need to be widened, need to be sized up in order to carry the flow and carry the traffic over the top of them. And our estimate for that is $16,500, so we'd be paying for half of the total cost.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. And discussion. Is this kind of low bid or?
Are these low bid?
Yeah, that's $16,000.
So how these work is we call different manufacturers of the size of culverts that are required for these projects, and we take quotes. And we'll take the low quote from the manufacturer, and we will pay for the production and delivery of the box culvert, and then the township pays for the placement and the construction, anything that has to do with putting it in the ground. And that's usually real close to 50-50. So instead of us billing them and them trying to pay us, we just say that's the 50-50 split. So that's 16.5, so the boxes were probably quoted at about $8,000. So we're saying it's going to be $16,500 to do the whole thing.
Just out of curiosity, are those made locally or how? Or
some of them are. It just depends. I mean, honestly, we'll get four or five quotes, and they'll sometimes some one will be low and sometimes another one will be. Locally, you know, from Charleston to Champaign, you know, we've got three or four different distributors. So it's relatively local no matter where we get it from.
Yeah. I'm just curious because isn't there a concrete?
There is, County Materials.
Yeah.
But the County Materials office that builds concrete box culverts is typically done in Charleston.
Oh, okay.
Here they make round pipe and they make beams. They don't typically make concrete boxes. So it's the same company, it's just a different plant. But we get a bid for construction and delivery so that we know what it's going to cost us to get that box to the job site.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. So we're out of the motion type of agenda items. I just wanted to go through the pavement management system study that I just received from Applied Research Associates. As you know, we've been doing this for almost 10 years now. Hired them many years ago to do our pavement management, which has been a great thing for us. It does a good job of helping us manage our system, and it does a good job of helping us budget for our system. And I think it helps you guys stay informed as board members as to you know, where we've been and where we're going with our county roads, and gives us good reason to you know, ask for certain things in budgets when it comes to roadways. So you know, we've got just a cover page there, and then page one, you know, just gives us a quick background of the roadways. You can see a picture there of the road that we did last summer. That was County Road 23 on the left prior to construction. That's County Road 23 on the right post-construction. So you can see we're taking roads that are looking like they're in great disrepair and bringing them back into full-life pavements. We got about 400 miles of centerline miles, so it'd be 200 total miles, basically, of roadways that the highway department's responsible for. Page two, he just tells you about the things that happened in 2017, which included some seal coating on County Roads 9 and 20 and 22, as well as the Colton Place recycling and the asphalt overlay on the road that we were just shown pictures of there on County Highway 23. So that just is kind of an update of what we did.
What is Colton Place recycling? They kind of dig it up, grind it, and then kind of repack it?
Yes.
But without heating it, huh?
Without heating it. Yes.
I guess I've seen that. I'm sure I have.
So it's a very large piece of equipment that comes from Germany.
Is that the one that has a big conveyor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And you'll see those on roadway projects where they're just cold milling, so they're taking the asphalt off and they're hauling it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring in new asphalt and put asphalt back on the top, which is kind of what we used to do. But you're wasting that resource. It's going to the contractor. They're using fuel to haul it away. They're using fuel to bring back in more asphalt. So a greener solution is to use that material that we already have there and put it back in place. So they have that same machine, only those millings go into like a pug mill.
Yeah.
And they inject oil into that pug mill.
Oh.
And they mix it right on site.
Sure.
And then it comes out of the pug mill right into a paver.
Yeah.
They lay it back on the road and then they roll it. So you end up with a cold, it's 150 degrees. I mean, cold is a little bit of a misnomer, but it's not like it's room temperature.
Right.
But it's cold in the eyes of the asphalt industry. They roll it back in, stabilize it, and then we come back and put some fresh hot mix on top of that. So we get to keep the structure in the roadway. We get to save fuel and everything else by not hauling it away. Contractors will tell you they give you some benefit for getting that recycle, but I never see it in a bid. I think that's a bunch of malarkey, you know. They can reuse it in their hot mix. They'll put 20 to 30% recycled asphalt back in their hot mix. But oftentimes, when it comes out of the mill, it's not sized appropriately for them to put back in their hot mix. So they got to put more effort into it to regrind it once they get it back to their lot and get it to a certain size. And then that milling goes back into a hot mix plant and gets heated up again, which consumes more fuel and causes more exhaust to go in the air.
Yeah.
So it's a very green alternative that gives us what I think has been a magnificent product, in particular on our roads that have a concrete pavement underneath them, because you have those old joints in that concrete pavement. And this cold mix is more flexible and pliable, so it will kind of retard those joint cracks from coming back through the asphalt for a longer period of time than just putting hot mix back on top.
Does it hold up as the hot mix?
Yeah, and I'll show you some, in the end of this thing, some of the data that's come out of this. But yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Definitely. And it gets rid of that old cracking pattern in the hot mix, too.
Sorry, it's one of the things that I studied at school, so I'm just trying to keep up.
Sure. So, every 2 years, ARA runs our roads with one of these vans that's on page 4. High tech, it's got GPS, it's got cameras everywhere, it's got lasers. And they'll do a condition of the roads by mileage, which is a PCI index. And you'll see where we've started back in 2009 and where we've gotten to. Our very good roads have grown tremendously. And we're at about 41-42%, and now we're up to about 65% of our roadways are in very good shape. And on the other side of the spectrum, our poor roads have dropped from around 7% down to 1-2%. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking to, you know, make our roadway pavement condition index grow and become, you know, higher as we use this pavement management system to kind of figure out what we're going to do with our roadways. So page 3 is just a map of the PCIs that they get when they run that van across our roadways. And you'll see the legend down there that shows very good, good and fair on page 5. The blue is very good, so you see we have a lot of blue roads. We don't have any red roads. We have some yellow and some orange in there. And those are the roadways that are on our 5-year, you know, window to be done. We got Staley Road, which is partially yellow. We're doing that in 2018. We got the road leading to Posotum down there, County Highway 16. That's yellow. We're doing that this year. The road up by Ludlow, which has some orange and some yellow in it, going from 45 over to our County Road 32. That's scheduled for 2019. And then we got the roads going through Philo and over to Sydney and over to Homer, which are yellow, which we're looking at in 2020, 2021. So we're using this as our baseline for trying to get to those roads that are in poor condition, but yet not ignore the ones that are in good condition. We're going out and we're doing crack sealing, we're doing seal coating, we're doing the regular preventive maintenance that needs to be done on the roadways in order to keep those blue roads as good as we can, and, you know, keep the green roads from becoming yellow and the blue roads from becoming green. So you'll see kind of at the end of the report how our pavement condition index has grown since we started using this system. And then page 6 is a roughness condition. So that van, it's kind of the seat of your pants type of grading. How rough is the roadway? You know, we pretty much stayed relatively even over the years as far as IRI, which is the International Roughness Index. About 70% of our roadways have a less than 100, which is considered very, very good. We have very few down in the poor area as far as roughness goes, and probably the one that's giving us this little tick in the poor is the road down there by Posotum, where we're going to be doing that this year with Golden Place Recycling with the hot mix overlay. And then there's some rutting data here. We don't have very much rutting just simply because we don't have the really, really heavy loads continually like they have on the interstates. So you'll see most of our roadways, you know, 80 to 90% don't have any amount of rutting on it. The one road down on Broadlands Road has some rutting in it. That's why we're doing a hot-in-place recycle with an asphalt overlay on that this year, just to get rid of that rutting. But you'll never see a big cup in our roads. The worst rutting you'll see is after it rains. You know, you'll see the wheel lanes got some water in them, which causes some safety concerns with people hydroplaning when they get into those ruts where the water stands, and people tend to drift over towards the center line to get out of them, which is something we're trying to address down on the Broadlands Road. Next map is just, it just shows the sections as they run them and how they number them, so that's really not of any great value to you looking at them, but it just kind of shows all the different sections that and how they number them. So when I go into their pavement management system online, I can actually go in online and see. They put the videos out there and everything that they do, so I can do a virtual drive of our roadways with, you know, because they got rear-facing cameras, side-facing cameras, front-facing cameras, so I can pick which view I want to, and I can, if somebody calls in with a problem, I can drive the roadway basically on the computer without having to go out and look at it.
So they kind of have also the deflection data. I guess they have everything that they're measuring. That's pretty.
And it shows it on a, it'll show it on like a Google map as you're traveling down the roadway. Mm-hmm. And then up, you know, and then you can put the views up there of what views you want to have. And it'll show you the deflections. It'll show you the PCI. And then you can also kind of virtually drive the roadway and see what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty neat. Pretty neat.
We could probably sell that to Netflix.
Google? Netflix, yeah.
Oh, that's not very nice. I'm sorry.
Page 9 is what I was talking about. Page 9 is kind of what I was talking about when Chris asked a question about cold in place recycling. And I had them do this specifically this year because I think we have enough historical data on our cold in place recycling projects, because the first one we did was roughly 11 years ago. But this is our curve that shows the general deterioration of our roadways over time. You see all the data points on there. But the red squares are cold in place recycling projects. And you'll see, for the most part, those are well above that line, which means we're getting good results out of that cold in place recycling. So I'm hoping that line over time starts to move up and move out. And instead of it being 17 years, where we're hitting that, where we kind of need to do something because we're hitting a 40 PCI, get that out to 20, 22 years. That's the goal. And if you kind of look at those red dots, and we get more of those red dots on there, obviously that line's going to start to move to the right. And Jeff,
so you're saying that the blue roads, you've got met roughly 17 years into the future?
Yeah, before they hit that 40 PCI, which is basically kind of the trigger for when we really need to go in and do something major to rehabilitate them. And as we do more maintenance on our roadways, and you know, as we get more historical data on that, when we're doing our crack sealing, when we're doing our seal coating, you know, that line's going to continue to move up and to the right. You know, so when we see that on roadways, we'll get a roadway where the PCI is starting to dip a little bit, and we'll go out and do our crack sealing and do our seal coating. PCI will actually come back up. So you get this effect where it starts to come down, you do a maintenance project, it comes back up,
and
it starts to go down, you do a maintenance project, it comes back up, and you can spend a lot less money on maintenance than you have to on construction if you're doing it right at the right time. We used to not do any seal coating at all prior to my tenure here. They would just mill and overlay. That was their maintenance program. Every 12 to 15 years, they did a mill and an overlay and a mill and an overlay. And that might have been good when asphalt was $35 a ton, but now it's $100 a ton. And you can't afford to do those types of operations anymore. So we're trying to get out ahead of the curve and do the maintenance before the road really gets into any condition where we got to spend a lot of money on it. So that's where this is taking us. And you'll see the what I'm talking about there on that unit cost for treatments on page 10. You know, if we do a crack seal, we're talking about $14,000 a mile. We get down into doing 4-inch cold in place recycling with a 3-inch overlay, we're at $380,000 a mile. So there's quite a difference in, you know, and we can do a chip seal for $30,000 a mile. And we'll generally crack seal in the first couple years. We'll do a chip seal in the first 3 to 4 years. Those usually last 8 years, and we can do another one. So we're out 3 to 4, do a chip seal at 8, you know, it, we'll do another one at 8. So we're already out there 16 to 20 years, you know, if we do the proper maintenance before we think we got to get back and do something major again. So the page 11 just kind of shows you how we, how the roads rate based on deflections and their PCI and what our typical treatment would be. So when their program generates our, what we need to do, what do we need to do as far as chip sealing, what do we need to do as far as asphalt overlays, it goes into this treatment matrix and it says, okay, there's a PCI of 42 and we've got, you know, fair deflections with low truck traffic, and it'll come in there and it'll pick a job and say, this is what we need to do. And I think when you emailed me, Chris, I said, sometimes it's more of an art than a science. We don't always do everything that this program generates because it's just a program, you know, it's junk in, junk out.
It's a model.
Yeah, it's a model. And we're trying to push that model to get it to the point where, you know, we're doing the right treatments at the right time, but it's modeling what we've done. You know, and trying to predict what we should do. So as we do more stuff that I think that we should do, this treatment matrix is going to change a little bit, that line's going to change a little bit, and we're going to start seeing more longevity, and we're going to see these treatments coming up at, in different times within this treatment matrix. This has changed a lot over 9 years.
Yeah, see, I'm all behind all this stuff because, I mean, I shared John's frustration with kind of shut down roads and perpetual bridge rebuilding. It just bugs the heck out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're looking at something on our bridges this summer because when I was at my county engineers conference back in April, there was a guy that did a presentation, and I talked to him at the vendor's show after that. They've got a top treatment for concrete decks where literally, it's pretty cool, even if a bridge deck is 10 years old and we've been salting it for 10 years, when you spray this treatment on there, it penetrates into the concrete and it drives the salt back out of the concrete. And you can see the salt. Actually, he showed us, he sprayed this stuff on top of concrete that had salt in it, and the salt literally comes out of the concrete. And the penetrator penetrates down into the concrete, seals up all the micro cracks and the little pockets of air that are in there to stop that salt from getting back into the concrete. So it's pretty cool stuff, and it's not that expensive. It's kind of like doing a crack seal or a seal coat on a road, only you're doing it on a concrete deck. So I'm working with him right now to try to, you know, figure out which bridges we want to do and find out what his price is going to be. The only issue that I have with the products is they're kind of vendor specific, and you know, we're in a low bid environment, so it may be something where, you know, I'm only going to get one bidder or one quote on something because they're the only ones that provide the product. There's other products out there, but I think some of them work better than others.
It's an innovative product,
right? So I'm going to play the game because you guys know in the purchasing policy, anything under $30,000, we only have to bid it over $30,000, or we have to quote it over $30,000, we have to bid it. So I'm going to try to keep it under $30,000 so that we can get the product that we want. You know, I hate to say that, but that's the truth, because there's some products that they're selling that just don't work, don't, you know. And somebody's going to come in and say, oh, my product's just as good as his or hers, and it's not, because there's really no approved list, per se, for these products because they're all kind of new and innovative. So I've seen 4 or 5 of them at different conferences I've been at and talked to other engineers who have used them. There's been experimental projects done with them through the FHWA and through other states, not in the state of Illinois. Because that's not what the state of Illinois does. They're not ingenuitive and innovative. They kind of tend to do what they do all the time. So we're going to try some of those products, and I think we're going to see great results. And if we can keep that salt from penetrating the top deck of our bridges, which protects that you know, reinforcing steel in the bridges, which is what the problem is. You get that salt down in there and it starts
corroding the rebar.
Right.
Madam Chair, can I ask an additional question here? Something that occurs to me is that you said that this kind of penetrates into the concrete, which is a porous medium, and that porosity kind of helps with flexibility.
Right.
And will this new material, does it kind of make it harder
There's one that they call a densifier. Uh-huh. Which I'm not as thrilled about, because it does, I think it could densify it to the point where it could have a negative impact on the top of the deck.
Okay.
The one that I saw, and I mean, they tell you this stuff, and I got to believe it because I've talked to other people. They spray this product on there, it drives the salt out. Mm. The product lays dormant in the concrete until it gets wet, which is what happens when we put salt on a bridge deck, right? And then it comes alive and pushes it back out. And then when it dries up, this stuff lays dormant again inside the concrete. So it's really just sitting in those cracks and crevices waiting for moisture to hit it. And then it activates and it pushes it back out. And it's supposed to last for ever. I don't know if that's true because it hadn't been down long enough for people to really know that. But I know it's going to last 20, 30 years.
What about friction?
Doesn't do anything to friction. You won't even see it on the deck because we grind all of our decks anyway.
If you're floating something up, it could potentially have the capability.
It comes out as a dry powder, like almost when it pushes it back out, because it'll dry out on the top and then it just kind of dissipates.
Will it keep you from having to treat those decks?
Yes.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, no, it won't keep us from having to treat them with our chloride
urine.
Yeah. No.
There's not enough coming up to do that.
No.
Oh, that's
no. Good. That would be cool.
Maybe
in the first year we might push enough out, but after you've gotten it all out, you know, then you're going to have to treat them. But the great thing is it's not going to penetrate back down into that steel and the concrete.
Right.
And there's a lot of ingenuity coming out in new rebar stuff, too. I mean, rebar has been traditionally coated with an epoxy, which is supposed to keep stuff from getting to the steel and protect it. Well, that epoxy eventually kind of breaks up underneath there, and it also gets nicked and it also gets scratched when you're doing construction. I mean, it's just when it's handled. Now they're doing hot-dipped galvanized rebar, and they showed us at our meeting. They can take a bar that's as long as this table, hot dip, galvanize it. After it's cold and it's been on there, they can bend the bar to the specifications for your bridge, and it doesn't crack it and it doesn't do anything to it. It stays intact, which is amazing. I don't know how it works.
Right.
I'm not a chemist, but yeah. It's a little bit more expensive than epoxy, but I think it's going to give you a lot more longevity on your rebar. So
yes,
the next bridge we do, I'm going to bid that as an alternate versus epoxy and see what the difference is.
Especially if it performs and what, you know, adheres to the
right.
Concrete cement adheres to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's not a problem. It's still the same rebar, it's just dipped in a galvanizing product.
I don't know about the other committee members, but I love
that. That's cool stuff. That's I like that.
So
that's really neat.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Related to the moisture you're talking about. If more salt gets on there and that creates moisture, but what about the moisture just naturally coming from rain and melting snow and things like that? How is that going to work?
That stuff will activate and it'll basically keep the moisture out, so the moisture will run off of the deck instead of it going down to the concrete and keeping the concrete wet for a longer period of time.
So there's an adherence factor to this surface treatment that doesn't get washed off when we have a gully washer.
That's right, because it's actually penetrated down into the concrete. It's a topical application because that's where it starts, but it penetrates the concrete and it sits down in the crevices and pockets of the concrete. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, but if you take a piece of concrete and take a tube of water and dump it upside down and set it on top of the concrete, over time, you'll see the water penetrate the concrete because that tube of water will eventually, you know, start going down and down. You put this stuff on and do that, it just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere. It won't penetrate into it. And they showed time-lapse videos of that over, you know, multiple hours and days, and the water level never changed, and this one just kind of kept going down and down and down as that concrete soaks up that water.
That could kind of actually help a bit with the freeze thaw, too.
Yes. Yep. Could do a lot of good things for the concrete decks. That's for sure. So I'm really excited about that technology. That's for sure. That's for sure. So this page 12 is kind of what is spit out by the program of what we need to do. Well, the 2018 projects are set. You know, it tells us that 2019 to do the Ludlow Road, which we're going to do. And then 2020 to do those roads that go from 45, excuse me, over through Philo and over through Omer, which we're going to do. And then rehabilitation of County Highway 12 in 2022. Now, there's one for the ages, because when I was here in 1993, we did that roadway. I was the engineer on it. So that one's going to be 30 years old when we redo it. So you got some roads that do well, and you have some roads that, for whatever reason, don't do quite as well, even with the old process that we were using, because that roadway is going to be 29 years old when it comes up to do. It's not in great shape. I mean, you drive it, it's pretty rough, but it's not coming apart on us. So just kind of gives you an indication of what comes out and the condition and the forecast for the five-year plan. And then it gives you a detailed work activity. This is the one that I don't always tend to totally follow, because it's spitting out chip seals from the program a little later than I would like for it to. The industry's moved towards doing chip seals earlier in the life of the roadway, because the sun and the weathering really oxidates the asphalt. Asphalt's not what it used to be. You know, with gas prices and fuel consumption across the world, they're sucking more of those volatiles, you know, when they're doing their, when they're in their refineries, they're trying to get more gas off of that base, you know, oil that they get. And the asphalt that's left isn't kind of the asphalt that we used to get. It's not as good. It doesn't have as
it lacks the volatiles to make it supple.
Yeah. Right, right. So, and they're trying to do things. They put chemicals in it. They put polymers in it to try to bring back, you know, those conditions that we used to have, but it's just not the same stuff. So we're trying to get back earlier into our seal coats, because once we seal it, put the oil and the slag on top of it, that seals the top of the asphalt, which keeps it from oxidizing. So there's even people in the industry that are doing a seal coat. They'll hot mix a road in May and they'll seal coat it in August, which I think is crazy. I mean, I think the general public would go, are you nuts? You just spent X number of hundreds of thousands of dollars on this road. Now you're back here doing something again. You just stay out of our way. We want to drive on the roadway. So I'm more of a 3 to 5 years we need to get back before that pavement gets white, when it's kind of turning gray, and get it sealed back up so that we prevent that oxidation from happening. So that's kind of where we're at. And this program is still trying to work its way through from what we used to do to what we're doing now. So some of these chip seal activities that it spits out, I don't always follow those, but I see what comes out of it. And but we're usually ahead of the curve when it comes to those chip seals. And that's what this map shows. I mean, it shows surface treatments on roadways that I think are beyond, you know, it's already too late, or we need to be doing roads earlier in the system than what they're showing on here. The rehabilitation is pretty much, you know, we're following that, but the chip seals, we're tending to get back to them earlier than they're showing on this program. And then the thing that's really telling from this whole pavement management system is pages 15 and 16. You'll see page 15, we're up to about an 80 on our PCI, and if we do all the things that that are in this program as far as chip seals and overlays and cold in place recycling, we're going to stay around an 80 PCI over a 10-year life. But you'll see we'll get rid of all these roadways on the bottom that are in bad shape or fair shape, and we're going to end up with all roadways that are either good or very good. And we've also grown our PCI, you see there on page 16. When we started this program back in 2006, our average PCI was 70. And we've grown it all the way up to 81. So the condition of our roadways have increased, you know, by 11 points on the PCI rating by doing the right treatment. You know, their big thing is the right treatment on the right road at the right time. And I think we're doing that, and this is showing that we're doing that. So I think it's a great way to show what we're doing and to predict where we're going in the future. And it also is the reason we got $1.1 million from Ameren, because we used this product to prove that they had done damage to our roadways. So it's paying back the cost that we're putting into it, that's for sure. So that's just a little 15-minute presentation on that particular program that we're using. So other business, I just wanted to... Yes, ma'am.
I have a question on this.
Uh-huh.
Now that you've done this for a period of years,
yeah,
and I do remember when it was originally approved, it's an expensive program.
Yes, it is.
So is there now data to show the value of this investment over this long term of what it's saving the county in actual money, net money?
Well, if you look, I can just give you one quick example. We got $1.1 million from Ameren. We haven't put in nearly that much money into this program, and this is the program that gave us the data and the strength to go to Ameren and say, this is the deterioration you've done to our roadways based on your project. So that project alone has doubled the cost that we've put into this. And if, yeah, we could look at historical, you know, how much money we're saving and how much longer our pavements are lasting based on the information we're getting out of this, and do a benefit cost ratio, if you will, of what our benefit we're getting out and what it's costing us. Because they only run the roads every 2 years, because we didn't feel the need to do it every year. They produce a report every year, which is basically based on historic, you know, deterioration of the roadways.
And also what you've done in that
two-year
time.
Yes.
Two-year time. That could be interesting,
yeah,
because if I'm remembering the conversation way back when this was,
when we had the van out in the parking lot, did you go out
on on the table, there was expressed concerns if it would indeed be a saving value for the county, and you're explaining that indeed you found that to be the case over the
We could have that in the next report. I'll see if we can get that information out of the program in the packet that shows the benefit cost ratio.
That would be really interesting to have that as a valuable piece of information now that you have enough historic data.
Absolutely. We can do that. Great thing about these guys is they're right here in town. I mean, they do this worldwide. I mean, they go over to the Middle East and do this stuff. I mean, they get on planes and take their equipment across the ponds and everywhere, and they're sitting right here in Champaign.
So why don't you tell them who it is, literally, for the new people?
Applied Research Associates?
Yeah, it's Bill.
Yeah. Bill Vavrick.
Yeah.
It used to be Aris Consultants way back in the 80s and 90s. They were bought out by, but Applied, this is just a very, very small piece of Applied Research Associates. I mean, they do all kinds of stuff on jet airplanes, and I mean, they are in military stuff. I mean, their transportation sector, which is housed out of Champaign, is just a very small piece of their overall company. But they're very well respected worldwide. I mean, some of their guys, they fly them to the Middle East, and they do pavement conditions of airports and roadways all over the world. So the nice thing is I can call them and say, can you give me this? And they don't charge me anymore. They've been very, very good because they've kind of used me as a marketing tool. When they go out and do their presentations, they talk about the Champaign County Pavement Management Study. So anytime I ask them to do something extra, they just do it. They don't ever ask for anything.
Yeah, and that's probably value because of that historic data.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how much does it cost?
In the years that they do everything, it's $80,000. And then it's half that cost when they just produce the report.
Yeah. Well, so, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah.
Anytime you can
Right.
Do maintenance and preventive maintenance and have a real plan for roads.
Yeah.
Especially when money gets...
And even when I'm doing a roadway project, like I'm doing the County Road 9 project where I'm actually going to go in and chew up the base and stabilize it, they'll come out and do extra work and run samples for me and give me a pavement design, and I never see a bill for it. I mean, it's stuff that I would have to hire some other consulting firm to do if they weren't willing to do it for basically free, because they do a lot of stuff, anything I ask them, any report I ask them. So I'm very happy with them. And they also sponsor my golf outing, so that's good.
Oh,
the real truth.
Now the backstory has just been laid on the table. Max has a question.
Yes, sir.
You know, we're about 6 months into Olympian and Lincoln.
Yeah.
How have the driving habits changed? And is there any way that we could help Urbana get, you know, motivated to move that to 45?
Money's the thing to move it to 45, obviously. That has to be a project that's going to be funded at the federal state level, because you're talking about tens of millions of dollars to do that. Yeah, if you go up on Lincoln Avenue and just sit there for a while, I don't know that Kuatz has done any traffic counts yet. They may well have done them, I don't know. But it's amazing how much, and it's mostly heavy truck traffic.
Yeah, I've been up there a couple times.
Yeah, I mean the you know, you got an asphalt plant there. They're building a new concrete plant right across from the asphalt plant. They got another concrete plant. You got UPS. You got the people that
waste transfer station.
Yeah, waste transfer station. You got the food warehouse. They're all, if they want to go north, they're not going out to 74. Because we all know what's happening on 74, people running into each other like daily.
Getting shot.
It's crazier, yeah. Their windows are getting knocked out. Yeah, it's very heavily used. I'm amazed. I was a small bit skeptical about how much it would get used. And that, I think that was because there were so many people saying that it wouldn't get used. So I was like, well, maybe they're right. I don't know. But it really is getting a lot of use.
How the residents been?
Haven't heard any complaints. Haven't heard it. Because the roadway's actually moved away from their house. I mean, those cars and trucks used to go right by their driveway. Mm-hmm. And now it's away from their house. So I think the noise that they perceived was going to happen hasn't happened, because it's removed from their house.
It would be good if there's a vehicle that we could use to maybe get the feds looking at that, to be able to complete that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think Urbana has to push for that.
Yes, they do.
And they have to come up with a match, right?
Right.
That and Curtis Road, we talked about that.
Yeah, we're still waiting to see what's going to happen with the underpass at Curtis Road.
Yeah. We lost the ITEP. Grant, I heard.
Well, for the sidewalk, or for the bike path, yeah. We didn't get it. Must have been a lot of competition. Yeah, sure. I'll take the blame.
What do we do to fix it?
Apply again.
Mm-hmm. When can we do that?
Next year. So every year. So the way a lot of that stuff works is you just really got to be a bulldog and stay in there and keep applying, and eventually they just acquiesce and go, okay, you got a good project and you put in multiple times. You know, some of the projects that probably beat that one were ones that had been denied a couple, three times before. So eventually, if you just kind of stay in there, you know, or if you hit it on the right year where there's not a lot of applications, you might get it the first time. But that's not very typical that you get it on the first time.
So what do we have to do to get 74 to 6 lanes or something on
it? I don't know.
Going through our
that's not a right domain.
How many accidents do we have on the road to get them to notice?
I'm on an email chain from Illinois State Police every time there's an accident, you know, in the district. And you know, I probably had one or two since I've been sitting here. I haven't looked, but it's 57, 74, it's crazy.
I mean, Wilmington, Effingham.
Yeah.
Kankakee have all had upgrades, and we just sit here.
Yeah,
we're going to get the bridge eventually. One second.
Yeah, I know. You got to get in there and talk to people. I mean, that's honestly the way it works. It's all politics. You guys know that. That's your that's where you guys sit. I mean, engineers asking for it isn't going to make it happen. It's got to be people that have some sway with senators or representatives or other people to get those projects to happen. And you're right. I mean, if you look at the crash rate and probably the fatality rate on our roads, I mean, we're not going to be comparable to Chicago, but downstate Illinois, we got to be in the top five, you know, in this area, without a doubt. In Bloomington, there was construction in Bloomington for 10 years, you know, all around Bloomington. And now they've six, eight lanes, wherever you go over there. And that needs to happen here. There's no doubt about it. But that's going to take somebody with some political clout to make it happen, without a doubt. I mean, once they get the 57-74 interchange done, then maybe that will kind of spur some additional construction and things happening around here. And that's actually still on the table for like 2020.
Oh, that's the date for it.
That's when they're going to start doing the peripheral jobs. So they got to do some bridges that
and
widen.
Exit.
Yeah.
If they do that, I think that it would work out that they could bring an Olympian interchange into 74 up there in the west.
That's been talked about for a long time, and it's always been pushed back by IDOT that's not a necessary. It's too close to
the other
57.
Yeah,
but if they had that, I mean, they could work all that together.
Yeah, but there are issues, and if exchanges are so close together in accidents,
right.
It's conducive.
Yeah,
they've got to be a mile apart.
Yeah.
That's a safety measure.
Yeah. There's too many people trying to get on and off in a short
stretch.
Yeah,
it gets confusing.
That's why 57-74 interchange now is so bad, because you got people coming on and getting off in the same proximity of each other. Mm-hmm. And when they get the new one done, it's going to be totally different, obviously. But I think once that happens, then we could see some movement.
That's,
I mean, they had the money to put six lanes out to Mahomet 10 years ago. Remember that?
That was a fight, too.
Yeah. And Chapin kind of somehow that, and it went away. I don't know how that happened.
I heard that story, and we talked for 30 minutes on that.
Yeah, exactly, and there's a lot of different angles on that.
That showed up, and there's 5,000 other things that needed to happen before that did, and all of a sudden that showed up on the list. And
right, exactly.
And it's politics interjurisdictional, which makes it more difficult.
So, one other quick thing under other business. The state had the bids for the bridge down on the Posotum Road, immediately east of 130. Stark was the low bidder on that. That project will start on Monday. We've sent out press releases, let people know. The estimate was, they were amazingly close to the estimate. The estimate was $1,095,000, and they came in at $1,098,000. So it was amazing how close they were to the estimate on that project. So
when people bid, do they know what the estimate is?
We don't show the estimate prior. Actually, the funny thing is, on the state projects, we send in our estimate to the state, and then they adjust it. And as long as our estimate is within like 10% of their adjustment, they don't even tell us what the estimate is when it goes to bid. So we don't even know what the estimate is until the bids come out and they say, oh, here's the estimate. Oh, really? Well, it's not the number we sent down, but it's within 10% of what we sent down, because they have their own estimators kind of work our numbers when we send them down to IDOT.
And those estimates are adjusted geographically?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they have to be. They're based on similar projects in the area.
Okay.
And bids that have been taken over the last, you know, year or two, whatever timeline they use. So, and Pius, you asked about that motor fuel tax bill, whether, so any government agency, and Max is the one that sent this to me, who receives more than $1 million in motor fuel tax, is going to have to implement a business enterprise program setting goals for the inclusion of minority veterans and female-owned businesses in the procurement of contracts. And obviously, I don't think anybody at this table is opposed to those things, minorities, veterans, and female-owned businesses having more work. But it just makes for more paperwork.
Well, actually, what is a business enterprise program?
That's what it is. It establishes goals. And I don't think it's just going to be that we have to pass one for roadway projects. Like the city of Champaign already has one where they passed an ordinance that said our goals for, you know, these different entities are such. And I think if this passes, that's what we're going to have to do as a county.
How much of a headache would that be for you?
The biggest headache is it's probably going to be a moving target. I mean, we can't just set one now and in 10 years it's still what it is.
You'd have to revise it, probably.
Because IDOT's supposed to produce on some website what the kind of average is in our area. And we're going to have to use their numbers kind of in our resolution. And then the headache's going to be, okay, I bid a project, an asphalt project. We got open road and we got cross. Neither one of them are woman-owned, veteran-owned, or anything like that. So then they're going to have to hire subcontractors to do whatever work subcontractors do. And we're going to have to get from them the percentage of their subcontractors that are meeting these little boxes that we're going to put them into. So there's just some projects that you do where there just isn't a minority contractor that does the work. And that's just the way it is. I mean, unless you're going to pay somebody a lot of money to come in from a long ways away just to have a minority contractor do the work, you're not going to get people that meet those guidelines. So I don't know exactly how they're going to establish it and whether the goals are going to... We have goals on every federal job, you know, like this bridge project. There's a goal. Now, if they don't meet that goal, they still have to report what they did, and then they put it into the overall state average goal. So we're going to have to meet those goals on every project. Is it going to be a five-year average? Is it going to be a running average per year? There's none of that specificity in the bill. So the thing is, they pass these bills that seemingly have good intent, and then somebody gets a hold of them, and then the intent goes out the window. So we don't know. We're opposed to it as an association. It passed the Senate without a single no vote.
Yeah, I know.
And this has been something that's a bill that's been brought up multiple times over a decade, and it's always been voted out. So actually, our association, from what I'm told, didn't oppose it this time because they figured it just wasn't going to pass, and then all of a sudden it's 54-0, and here we go. So the second reading of the bill is supposed to be next Thursday. Our association has people lined up to go talk about the implications to local agencies.
You know, it's a wide $1 million cutoff.
That's just a round number they plucked out of the air.
That's right, exactly right.
Will that ever be adjusted?
Probably for inflation? Probably not.
No.
Yeah. If our MFT would ever grow.
That's where it's going to kind of get.
Yeah.
It's just a number. It's a nice number.
Yeah. So in our district, you know, Vermilion County, McLean County, and Champaign County are the only counties that get over $1 million in motor fuel tax money.
Like 60 of the counties.
Yeah. So it's not going to affect the Pyatts and the Douglases of the world because they don't get that much money. But the larger populated counties, it's going to affect.
So the way Champaign handles it, though, is they subset their projects so they have smaller entities, female-owned, minority, have a chance of bidding where those entities are not large enough to do a big project.
And they have that ability because they have smaller projects.
That's correct.
All of our projects are usually
huge.
Very large.
It makes it very difficult. Yeah. The other is that instead of this push, it would be nice if the state was pushing so that those smaller entities that they're targeting in this bill get help to grow to be bigger.
Exactly.
Bigger entities, and that's not what is.
And I thought that's what they were doing, like out at Parkland in that area. Didn't they have some WB stuff that was going on?
Yeah, they do, but
there?
The growth factor isn't to a critical mass, so this can happen. And nobody's against this, but it's sort of like passing something and then not funding it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's an unfunded mandate, without a doubt.
Yes, without a doubt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The intent's good. I agree
Absolutely.
With the intent.
Absolutely. Everybody probably agrees with
me. I mean, the good news is that it kind of sets a, you know, by setting a goal, at least it's kind of opens the door for creating.
Only if there's money to help these entities grow.
Well, yeah, and you know, step by step.
And we have some, like Varsity Striping is owned by a female. They do a lot of work. I mean, millions of dollars every year in striping of roadways. So we have some local contractors that are woman-owned or, you know, DBEs. Most of them are small-time, you know, like you got a seating contractor, you know, on a contract. Well, when we do a bridge, that's $1 million. The seating's $5,000 out of that million, you know. So where are we going to get, like Patrick said, where are we going to get the sizable DBEs to qualify to do the work?
Yeah.
There's not that many out there. In Chicago, I'm sure there's a ton of them, you know, but in downstate Illinois.
Oh, it doesn't. Yes, it
just,
absolutely.
They're not here.
Absolutely.
Not here. So that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Okay. The Chair has no report. So a designated would be
9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yep.
I thought 8 was also.
No, that was, you already gave me the authority on that.
Oh,
we were
okay.
Just reviewing the bid tab.
Okay, sorry.
She did take a vote, but it wasn't necessary.
Okay, anything else for the committee?
Yeah.
If not, we adjourn.
Thank you.
Would you like the spreadsheet back?
No. Well, we'll recycle it if you don't want to take it. If you want it, sure.
I think that's the moment.